Welcome into This Week in Bitcoin, episode 122. My name is Chris, chrislas.com and jupiterbroadcasting.com. This is one of those weeks that I think Bitcoiners have been waiting for, and they don't even know it's happened. Something is shifting where all of the things that have happened in the last few weeks that we've been talking about are actually starting to sink in a way that seems like perhaps the winds of change are starting to blow in Bitcoin's direction. I'll get into what I mean here in a moment. I'm going to make the case this week that this bullish setup that we're starting to see isn't a temporary thing, probably isn't even a cycle thing. It's more of a structural thing. All right, what do I mean by a structural thing? Well, a lot of times things come and go in these news cycles, and a week later we've completely forgotten about it, and we're on to the next topic, the next narrative. This time, though, things are really starting to stick. They're not letting it go over in the market, and we're starting to see a kind of entrenching of beliefs about the future of the overall fiscal system. I know that sounds broad, but I mean it. And this first clip will kind of recap us and reset where we're at.
Everyone's celebrating this time as volatility has returned back to the upside. And I think this is related to what's occurred at the Treasury over the last week when they're doubling the amount of share buybacks. And really what this points to is the lack of sustainability of the fiscal outlook. And the currency debasement trade was really popular in the earlier in this year. And then AI kind of took some of the spotlight away from that. So Bitcoin and gold became out of favor. But the important point to make is that it wasn't a trade. This debasement was structural, meaning that it's related to the fact that we have $40 trillion of debt. They can't afford to have the long end of the yield curve rise because interest expense will explode. Interest expense is already the third line item this year. Fiscal deficits are on track to exceed last year. It's supposed to be $2.1 trillion. And investors are starting to ask questions. And they're looking at alternatives and hard assets because when they come out and say, hey, we're going to go to treasury buybacks, really what they're saying is we're going to sacrifice the currency. And you saw that in the dollar move in response to that news. And you saw that with the moves of Bitcoin and gold.
Yeah, they're not asking questions so much because they got their answer. They're going to debase the currency. And that's why Ray Dalio's message all of a sudden has an audience again. He's been put on blast this week, going around talking to the various different news outlets that have him on. And I think he is putting a voice to this new reality that is setting in for the market right now.
So, for example, last year, American markets significantly underperformed foreign markets. And people don't quite realize that. And the best asset class, in a sense, was gold. But think of that as being the money. So in answer to your question, okay, that was a lesson I learned, that if there's a depreciation in the value of money, it makes everything look like it's going up.
You know, I think that's actually a really important point that we should mention more often. I think people have a hard time wrapping their head around that. Well, my house is going up. My stocks, they're going up. Ray's saying what Bitcoiners and gold bugs have known for a long time. But the reason Ray is getting airtime right now is Bessin and Warsh just had their dog and pony show at Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Big event, right? Everybody, what's he going to say? Jackson Hole. And, bond yields have been rising around the West since that meeting. And the U.S. Treasury Secretary, he's in there. I think Arthur Hayes calls him Buffalo Bill Bessin. He's in there trying to provide a reliable buyer to the market, trying to get those yields to at least sort of settle down a little bit. But that's happening at the same time that the federal chair, Kevin Warsh, has been saying over and over again that he's not going to give forward guidance to the market. He's not going to spoon feed the market information because he wants clear signals from the market so they can make data decisions that are reflecting real data and not Fed distorted data. Okay, we can all kind of get on board with that concept for a moment. The problem is Bessin's coming in and distorting the number one signal the Fed's watching, the bond market. So Bessin's coming in and messing with the very signal that Warsh claims he's trying to clear up. Another way to put this is that Warsh is trying to clear the windshield so they can make better decisions, and Bessin's coming along and fogging it back up. They are working at cross purposes here, and People aren't stupid. They can see that this is happening. They can see that the Fed and the Treasury are working at cross purposes. At minimum, the Fed are trying to keep rates steady, possibly, you know, jawboning like they're going to raise them, which seems doubtful, but jawboning they might raise them to try to do as much as they can via credibility to cool the market. While Bessin's out there like, yeah, we might blow $1 trillion. Do you understand how that's a conflict? How that's like at the core, very, very core problem? One hand is trying to do one thing and the other hand is trying to do another thing. This is something that the market sees. We all see it.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, by coming into the bond markets and trying to bring down yields, has made things more difficult for Warsh as he tries to speak to global central bankers here at Jackson Hole. To some degree, Bessent and Warsh might be working at cross purposes here, because in order to get inflation under control, Warsh needs to potentially tighten financial conditions, which means raising rates. Whereas from the Treasury Secretary's point of view, yields on the long end are too high and they're affecting consumers and also government debt load and the burden of repaying the debt. So he wants to bring that down a bit. And Kevin Warsh has said that he wants to see what markets have to say without interference from policymakers. So this is all muddying the waters at a moment when he really needs to be very clear about his communication about getting inflation down. Of course, what Treasury does in Treasury markets is not really the Fed's business. And I think that Warsh really feels that there needs to be a sharp line between what monetary policy does and what the Treasury does. So in that regard, whatever Bessent does is Bessent's business. But it's really not, because what happens in the yields and in the Treasury markets do have an effect on the Fed, partly because Warsh has to read what the markets are saying, but also because it affects the tightness of financial conditions. And that is going to have a direct effect on how the Fed policy is going to need to respond to try to get inflation under control. He has not given any hint that he's about to raise rates. A lot of his colleagues, though, have talked about if inflation does not come down soon, we will need to move. And that's going to be the conundrum for Warsh as he talks to global central bankers here.
Okay, so that's the banker perspective. This next clip is 21's new CEO after Jack Mahler stepped down, and he kind of puts it in Bitcoin terms.
It's kind of like coming out. But as I said before, it's still a drop in the bucket on the ocean of liquidity, right? And on top of that, I think the recent macro events help Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a monetary asset that, different than anything else that we've ever seen as humans, it's extremely predictable. The monetary issuance is written in code. You don't have, 12 different Federal Reserve banks making determinations that are opaque, that you don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
Treasury chairs coming in and trying to buy the long end of the curve. Nothing of that happens, right? It's extremely predictable. You know that every 10 minutes, a new block on average, every 10 minutes, a new block is going to come in. 3 1/8 Bitcoin is going to be issued, right? You know that every 4 years that halves, it's all written in code, it's all transparent, it's all open source, and we've never seen this. And going back to Berkshire, Charlie Munger actually used to say that predictability should trade at a premium, right? And I think Bitcoin should trade at a premium exactly because the monetary policy, it's a line. You know exactly what it's going to be, for the foreseeable future. And unfortunately, we live in a world with a lot of uncertainty right now, not only politically, but on the monetary side as well. And I think that's what we're seeing on Bitcoin right now. It's a lot of like the realization that this is a very different asset from what we've seen before.
And it's not just the Tether guy saying it. That's the point I'm trying to make here, is there has been a tone shift around Bitcoin with the suits that seems to have really stuck after this Treasury decision. And that narrative kind of went on blast this week. That's really what I'm noticing. Here's BlackRock's head of digital assets. They're seeing a shift at the institutional level.
So there's periods where it's behaving more risk on, and that's partly driven by some of the speculative traders that exist in the market, often with leverage. And there's periods where it behaves more risk off. And certainly in the last couple of weeks, the latter narrative has risen back to the forefront. I think in the long run, that's the narrative to bet on around Bitcoin. That's how most of the long-term institutional type investors that we engage with are seeing it.
That's how the long-term institutional investors that they engage with, BlackRock, that's how they're seeing it. So not only is it BlackRock's position, but that's how their clients are seeing it. That's what he's saying right now. That's what Robbie's saying.
Institutional type investors that we engage with are seeing it. And the idea is that Bitcoin, by its nature, is this global, scarce, decentralized, emerging monetary alternative. And ultimately, its long-run risk and return drivers are going to be quite distinct from most other asset classes that investors have. And so, indeed, it's been the case the last couple of weeks. Equities and other asset classes have been pretty challenged. They've been under some pressure. Fixed income markets have been choppy. And you've seen Bitcoin, as well as gold, but particularly Bitcoin, have a fairly significant rally because of that distinct nature and the way it's seen as this emerging store of value.
And Strategy started buying again this week. They bought 4,603 Bitcoin for $370 million. So Strategy now holds 845,050 Bitcoin. So do the math with me, boys and girls, because here's how I see it. So they sold over the summer a total of 6,916 Bitcoin. And they just bought 8,260 Bitcoin over two weeks, a total of 8,000. So this recent announcement was 4,603. Sorry, the numbers are a little confusing. But what I find interesting here is it would appear, and I had the Grokbot double check this math, that Strategy has ended up with a net addition of 1,344 Bitcoin. After all the drama about will they, won't they sell? Oh, Strategy selling. Another week, Strategy selling. They're buying cash or whatever they're you know, whatever they were doing, buying their own shares. But it would appear, if this Grok math is right, that through all of that, they're actually up 1,344 Bitcoin. And it sounds like, unless things take a dive, right? Unless things change, it sounds like they're not planning on selling any more for the foreseeable future.
What needs to happen, or what would indicate to you the next right time to actually offload some Bitcoin from your balance sheet?
We're a net accumulator, right? And so I don't sit around and say, well, when am I going to sell Bitcoin next? It comes down to a bit of a capital management mathematical equation of when we would do it. I don't foresee us selling Bitcoin as we enter into what I consider a pretty heavy bull market. And yeah, we'll be buying Bitcoin at 80,000. We'll likely be buying Bitcoin at 90, at 100. And when Bitcoin hits 130,000 at an all-time high, we'll be buying it. And people will say we're buying the top. And when it's at 260,000, people will say the $130,000 Bitcoin was a good purchase.
Okay. All right. I love it. All right. This next clip I wanted to play because it's an interesting quick debate on CNBC. Listen for just the bullish capitulation in this, essentially, because the worst thing that they can come up with for Bitcoin is a short term, near term issue. And the bullish case that they can come up with would be like a 20 year bull run.
In order to be bullish, I think of Bitcoin here. You had the administration news. You had the thing with Bessent a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. That was a tailwind. The headwind now comes in the form of a Fed that apparently is going to hike in September. A lot of people think that. I am not one of them. But a hawkish Fed is not bullish for Bitcoin. So I think buyer beware at 80,000.
All right. Tim, you got a quick word?
Well, I think the dollar is going lower at some point, and therefore that is certainly an ingredient for a Bitcoin rally. It's not the only ingredient, but all those reasons that we're concerned about with deficits and the reasons why people are buying gold, some piece of that is a Bitcoin rally.
Yeah. I guess if you're watching CNBC and don't understand what kind of investment setup they're implying that is, you just need to turn the TV off. Speaking of that, over on the Fancy for Rich Clients Only TV network, aka the Schwab network, their message to clients is clear as a bell.
We've really seen a rebirth of the debasement trade, whether you're looking at gold and precious metals or cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. As the pressure started, we saw gold and Bitcoin both sell off, and they're slightly down on the day, but they've required. But the total tone of that conference was very hawkish, obviously, with investors starting to price in rate hikes. That does put the debasement narrative maybe back into check. And so I think crypto prices are reflecting to that news this morning.
Ironically, if the Fed doesn't cut, it's likely going to result in a bit of a pamp. And it seems pretty hard for the Fed to raise rates, right? So if the Fed just holds, they don't have to cut, they don't have to raise. I think if they just hold, it's likely going to be a pamp. Now, if they do cut, it's going to be a pamp. But that seems unlikely. It is pretty, let's look it up right now, because I've been finding this one, we have been seeing a massive divergence in what Polymarket, the people, in other words, think is going to happen in September versus what the big banks think is going to happen. So on Polymarket right now, as I look at it, as I look at it, I see Polymarket's crazy. Polymarket thinks there's going to be a 25 basis points decrease. Polymarket is pricing in. That's crazy. No. All right. Well, anyways, the divergence between Polymarket and the big banks is just absolutely crazy at this time. The big banks are all pricing in a rate hike. Polymarket's pricing in a rate hold or cut. If we get a hold or a cut, I think that's going to be a great thing for Bitcoin. This debasement trade isn't a 10-minute thing. It's not a one-quarter thing. It's not a one-Fed rate decision thing. So I hope you're getting how bullish this is. I hope you're wrapping your head around once the dust settles, the way Bitcoin responded to this treasury buyback moment is so insanely bullish. It's a new type of structural setup. It's a new type of market fit being identified for Bitcoin. And it's this type of stuff that matters so much more to Bitcoin than something like the Clarity Act. And I just think it's really ironic because so much of the news coverage and the YouTube punditry and whatnot has been focused on the Clarity Act and what a pump it's going to be once the Clarity Act passes. And I remain squarely focused on macro. I think the Clarity Act has been a distraction the entire time. And I think it's this stuff, like the bond market stuff and the way Bitcoin responds, that matters way more than one law in one country. And, all the promising about how it's going to pump after Clarity passes completely missing the situation over here. I'm sure when Clarity does pass, if it does pass, we probably will see a micro pump, right? We'll probably see what I mean by that is a time relative pump for a minute, right? We'll see a pump for a minute. But what we're talking about today is structural. It's long term. It's baked in. The bed is made, and now the market sees the two forces fighting each other. And Arthur Hayes, he sees it this way.
The Clarity Act for crypto. How significant is it?
Insignificant. Doesn't matter. Who cares?
You hate it.
I don't hate it. I mean, if I was a person building a U.S.-focused market crypto project and I needed to get money from U.S. venture capital firms, I absolutely understand why you like the Clarity Act. You want regulation that gives you some sort of moat so you can, you know, attempt to block your customers from doing things because you spent more money on lawyers than they did. I get it 100%. That's not the type of investing that I do in crypto. Like, I'd rather just buy a stock. So if that is your game, that's your game. I think the Clarity Act is a terrible thing for US crypto, for actual creativity, for actual builders building things that are useful, that have product market fit. Bitcoin didn't need the Clarity Act from 2009 until the present. It doesn't need it till the future. What does it need? Buffalo Bill Bessent trying to save the U.S. Treasury market by upping his buybacks overnight, or, you know, trying to print money using the Fed to help the Japanese sell, you know, swap their treasuries for cash. That's what Bitcoin needs. It doesn't need a Clarity Act to go up. And again, the Clarity Act has been talked about ad nauseum for the past, what is it, like 2 years? And what, we just generate one of the largest moves of recent history? Because again, the market has recognized that the debt issue in the U.S. is a real issue and yield curve control is coming.
I think he nails it right there. So I want to know your thoughts. And also I want to remind you that this is a Value for Value podcast, and I don't have any sponsors. That's been an intentional choice, but it is not the choice of a luxurious lifestyle. And often the hourly rate of this show breaks down to, well, you wouldn't want to look at it too often. It looks pretty low. And so I would love if you went over to boost.jupiterbroadcasting.com, send a little fiat or sats towards the show, and put a message in there for me too. Questions, your thoughts on anything talked about here, the macro stuff. I don't have a particular question for you this week. It's just sort of a plea to keep supporting the show. I know it can be difficult on the sustain, but the show is a high energy, high research, high intensity work show. I don't mind the work at all, but I am also a businessman and I got to focus my priorities wherever they make the most sense. And so your support helps me stay focused. That's just the reality of it. That's just, and I think that makes, and I'm just being completely honest with you and transparent. I think it makes total sense. If you've ever owned a business, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. So with all of that, it's time to get into the rest of the show. You also support the show just by doing what you do. If you want to stack sats on River, you can support the show doing that. Use my link in the show notes. The Bitcoin Well, if you're all about self-custody, you want to go right to your own wallet. They don't have a wallet for you on their platform. That's the Bitcoin Well, an amazing automatic self-custody platform. If it's time to take your sats and load them into a gift card and go get yourself or someone else something, check out the Bitcoin Company. They only deal with Bitcoin, hundreds of gift cards over the Lightning Network, sats to gift card, instantly. Then, when it becomes time to live life, pay the bills, do the day-to-day, check out the Fold card. You can stack sats as you do the day-to-day. And if you need to get access to your Bitcoin without selling it, aka a Bitcoin-backed loan, I recommend two places, Salt Lending and Strike. Used them both. I think they're great. Different product offerings, both extremely good. And honestly, Strike goes from strength to strength. No official affiliation with those companies, but I do use them myself, and you can support the show by doing what you do. It is time for some boosts.
4 score and 7 boosts to go.
And let's start with our baller booster, who is J-Cube, coming in with 70,000 sats.
Hey, rich lobster!
J-Cube writes, yep, I built a 2 of 3 multi-sig wallet with the Jade, Bitbox, and Trezor using Sparrow. I just grew up on Sparrow and really like it. If there's something better or a compelling reason not to use it, do let us know. Boosty, boosty, boost, boost. You know what, J-Cube? I don't have any compelling reason not to use it. Use it myself. Like it a lot.
Boosty, 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 boost.
I think the only thing I would add is they just released an update, and you probably want to do that update. The old Sparrow Wallet, I think, just had a solid update. But thank you for that overview. That's a really good setup, and I like the multi-vendor aspect of it. I think Trezor, Bitbox, and Jade are all extremely good. Of the two, I think Jade and Bitbox I have a real strong preference for, and the Trezor, I think, is a good third in there, too. So, you know what, J-Cube? You get the TWIB stamp of approval.
Make it so.
Thank you very much for being our baller. North Lake Hoddle comes in with 34,567 Satoshis. Using the web boost. Chris, thanks for your amazing work and filtering out the best signal for us lowly plebs. Much appreciation. I would boost every episode, but Fountain fights with me. And I need another pod app, and I'm lazy. As to the 4-year cycle, I think we're in a vicious feedback loop now, so it echoes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, North Lake. Is it North Lake? North Lake? A HODL? A HODL? A HODL? I think if you are on iOS, you could check out Castomatic. I do think Fountain's really good. AntennaPod is pretty strong, especially if you're going to use the web boost. Some really good options, actually. You could always also try resetting Fountain and logging back in and see if it works for you. Good luck, sir, and thank you for the boost. I really do appreciate it. OB's here with 21,000 sats.
21 gigawatts!
You know, that's really growing on me. I watch every single Macro Monday. Oh, and Mick Retard is 100% paid to say what he says. He's talking about, what's his name? Not John McClane. That's diehard. But, you know, the Bloomberg analyst I played last week. He's 100% paid to say what he says. I can't even put into words how smart I think he is and how intentional his spin is. Really, OB? That strong, you think, huh? Mike McClone. Ah, the old noodle got it. You know what, Opie? I'm tending to think you're right. I just hate to think that about somebody. But thank you very much for the boost and the data point. And I'm glad you're watching Macro Monday. They kind of always talk about the same thing, but it's also iterative. So there you go. I mean, it does sound to move forward, too. Thank you. Gene Bean comes in with a row of McDucks. That's 2 boosts of a row of ducks.
Things are looking up for old McDuck.
4,444 Satoshis. Swaps are back in bowl wallet. yes, good to see. And he links me to the post. Also, there's another couple in the works. I don't know if they're in public testing yet, but I'll let you know when I have a take on them. Gene continues, a follow-up to my multisig question. I looked into Nuncheck and came away disappointed. The Linux app has real issues on Ubuntu Wayland. The Mac OS one still doesn't have Apple Silicon version. They have no security reporting or related info on their website. And the only CLI repo has a security MD or related info in it. For an app with a team and a company behind it, this is worrisome. On top of that, both Mac and Linux have some real UX issues too. Yeah, I agree. When I tried it on Linux, I was a little underwhelmed. And I think that was one of the reasons I didn't go the Nunchuck route. I really like what they offer. And their mobile apps are really solid. And I think that's probably the primary way their customers use it, Gene. But I, like you, for some reason, when I'm dealing with a large amount of money, just don't like doing it on the phone. I don't know, man. I mean, I do. I do it from time to time. But I guess I'm... That's how you know I'm a millennial, I suppose, if I were to accept the title. Thank you, Gene. Ace Ackerman comes in with a row of ducks. 2,222 sats. The four-year cycle is a narrative pushed by trading degen class to fleece the BTC plebs, and it will be successful as the market cap grows. Oh, man! That's some nice bacon.
Fun will now commence.
That's a fun one. I like that.
This is a tasty burger.
Why not? Why not? Why not? Ace, you might be onto something there. I like it. Kiwi Bitcoin guides here with 6,543 satoshis.
Put some macaroni and cheese on there, too.
I'd like to hear more about places to use Bitcoin as money, especially any online services that you are aware of. I know there's VPNs, email services, AI aggregators who accept sats. Any more? I always thought using sats to support open source projects and developers should be an easy win. You know, Kiwi, what would be nice is like a directory or a wiki if there's... I don't know about that, but a directory of some kind that has a JSON feed you could feed your Clanker, obviously. I mean, you got to be modern because Wiki is the opposite of modern, I guess. The other thing to consider, too, is maybe the modern way really more like a line of credit that you use to pay off a credit card that gets you the perks you want. And so the Bitcoin is like the back end bank reserve note, and you're using the fiat rails for the day-to-day purchases, and then you're settling with the Bitcoin when it comes time, assuming maybe you could even kind of time the market a little bit there on a gain. I don't know. What do you think of that, Kiwi? And is maybe not the solution direct one-to-one point of sales. I think the biggest win, though, we've seen in that regard recently, right, is Square. Square-enabled Lightning payments on any Square terminal that the customers want to, that the point of sales people want to turn it on. Hey, Gene Bean's back with some more sneaky sats. Would you look at that?
That's not possible. Nothing can do that.
Thank you, by the way, Kiwi. Gene Bean comes in with this sneaky boost because he has a question for the audience. Anyone got any suggestions for Bitcoin education materials for elementary age kids? Ooh, elementary age is an interesting, I think maybe you got to go more money fundamentals, perhaps. Like, I would say, Gene, maybe here's something to look for, is a thought technology to instill upon the elementary children, which is we have a real problem in society today where capitalism has become a bad word and is a shorthand for anything wrong in market dynamics. So data centers run amok is capitalism, or you're paying too much for your bananas and your eggs. That's capitalism, right? And children need to understand that human barter at its basic level is a form of capitalism. And we would be trading with each other in some means if it were not for cash and money or Bitcoin. We'd be using shells, right? We'd be using rocks. We'd be using bottle caps. Because we have to abstract away our time and energy. Because you might not want a cow, and that's all I got is cows, right? I got lots of eggs at home, Gene, but you might have eggs too. And the only currency I've got is eggs. So we have to have an abstracted layer that is, we all agree, valuable, that we can trade for time and energy. And I think maybe getting children to understand that capitalism is a basic natural human function, and that like what we see today isn't because capitalism, it's because corruption, market distortions, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know what book that is, but that'd be the direction I might consider. Thank you, Gene. Good to hear from you again. Orange Mart's here with 5,000 sats.
Everything's under control.
No message, just value. Thank you, sir. Your inner child's here with 2,120 sats. When Bitcoin came online in 2009, there would only be 2.1 quadrillion sats in existence at the same time there were 8.9 quadrillion U.S. mils, in other words, $0.001, and 169 quadrillion micrograms of gold. A microgram of gold today trades for 0.0001 cent, while a sat is about 0.007 cent. Also, there's been no Bitcoin printing after 2009, and it only goes from there. And you know what I like you did there is you went down way down, right? You went way down there, right? Because we often talk about it in one Bitcoin terms, but there isn't really anything called, there isn't a Bitcoin, there isn't one Bitcoin in the Bitcoin network. It is just a denominator of Satoshi. So I really like that. Thank you, your inner child. Nakamoto is here with 3,500 sats.
This is why I have bedtime wine.
I don't think there's a four-year cycle. Bitcoin's price bottom and busts are just a mirror of where our economy's at. Definitely got to be a component of that. Definitely. Right? But it's not just our economy. That's the other thing that gets me. That's where it gets a little messy. Adversary 17 is here with 4,096 sats. Thank you, Nakamoto.
10 gold blooms out of a possible 10 gold blooms.
I'd love to think that when your son asks why the price is going up, you get out and pipe up and say, well, now sit down, son, and let me tell you. I do give him the short version. In fact, a lot of times, I shouldn't say that because that makes me sound bad. But initially, I kind of did the sailor snort, if you know what I'm talking about, where when somebody asks Sailor a question about Bitcoin he's asked to answer it a million times, he often goes, well, and then he does like a whole explanation. That's what I sometimes do, is I pause for a moment, I replay the show in my head, and I'm like, how can I say this in 30 seconds? You know, it's a good exercise, actually. It really is, because then if I can explain it to them in 30 seconds, I know I can do a show segment on it. Thank you, 17. Appreciate you. The Atomic Ass is here with $5 of fiat. Adversary 17's concern about the lack of entropy on air gap systems has me thinking, could an SDR be used as an entropy source? Yeah, I've wondered that too. Or, the Wi-Fi radio too, right? Or like a LoRa radio too, perhaps, like on the mesh tab. Like, could radio noise in general be more used? I think the Linux kernel does use network noise and it uses bus noise. So there's a lot of noise sources in the computer that the Linux kernel pulls from. Thank you, Atomic. Appreciate that. Gene Bean. Gene Bean's back with a member boost.
He's a good guy.
He's a real good guy.
No, he's a great guy.
Oh, I don't know if I can open. Well, oh, you gave me the Primal link. That'll probably open. Curious on your take on the idea that this post and similar ones floating around regarding Cold Card. And he links to a Primal post that, gosh darn it, I have the worst luck on air with Nostr links. That is not loading for me, Gene, but I will try to load it after the show. I'm not a big subscriber if it's a conspiracy around Cold Card. I am not a big subscriber to that. I think they screwed up huge, though. And I think they were lying in a sense. That might be too hard of a word. Maybe not. I think they were presenting as a larger company with more people involved and pretending sometimes to be outside contributors, at least in one provable example. Maybe to get around open source licenses and things like that, right? So when you really dig into it, there's a lot there I don't like and a lot of hubris that led to this. So, and I think you can get there without any kind of conspiracies, if that's what the post is about. All right. Thank you, everybody, especially Gene, really coming in. Gene, you just popping in. And of course, a big thank you to J-Cube, who came in with our 70,000 sat baller boost this week, really helped push that number up. So let's summarize it all up. We had 23 of you stream Satoshis as you listen. That's something you can do in the podcasting 2.0 app. Just stream those sats as you listened. And together, you all stacked 38,756 Bitcoin.
Well, I'll be dipped.
Not too bad. When you bring it together, including some fiat boosts that have just been converted to sats at our current market value, our total for this week is 218,895 Satoshis. You know, not our best week. In fact, the last couple of weeks haven't been our best week, but it is the end of summer, and I guess we only get great support when things are blowing up. But I stay here every week, reporting and keeping track. I appreciate your support, too. Boost.jupiterbroadcasting.com or a podcasting 2.0 app, or put your support on autopilot at jupiter.party, and then you get a free member boost with every single episode. All right, with that, I think we get into some rather interesting updates this week. This first one was a pleasant surprise. We just saw Bitcoin's first quantum safe transaction. Yes, the first post-quantum Bitcoin transaction was broadcasted this week. Friends, no soft fork required, no hard fork required, no protocol upgrades were required either. And it's actually live on the blockchain today.
And yesterday, we were able to take this beyond the proof of concept. Last night, we submitted the first QSB transaction on Bitcoin mainnet. And I'm very excited to announce that as of, I think, 5 hours ago, that transaction has been mined by Mara Slipstream and is live on Bitcoin mainnet. This is a monumental moment, right? This is the first post-quantum resistant Bitcoin transaction on Bitcoin mainnet today. It required no soft forks. It required no hard forks. It required no core protocol upgrades. And it's live today. And so just to really paint the picture of what this means for all of you here and what this means for us and what this means for your businesses, right? We've built essentially a parachute, right? As we're flying through this quantum storm, we have a parachute in the airplane. Or as we're facing the threat of the impending quantum nuclear war, we have a doomsday bunker. That's what this product is. What this product is not, it is not a cure for quantum. This product is still opt-in. Coins that have lost their private keys or coins that are lost from circulation, those coins cannot be moved into an address with QSB enabled.
I think that's an important distinction. So this isn't a permanent, everyone's going to use this, but it is an escape hatch and may help tame the quantum FUD. So the transaction happened using a method created by a Starkwave researcher that you just heard there from Bitcoin Asia up on stage. The method generates millions of signature candidates until it finds one with a specific structural property that doesn't expose the vulnerable material while waiting in the mempool, which is when these transactions would be vulnerable. The signature grinding, as it's called, is deliberately computationally expensive. A single transaction can take hours to produce, but that cost is what makes it resistant to quantum shortcuts. It's being dubbed QSB, Quantum Resistant Bitcoin. Now, ordinary Bitcoin nodes currently don't recognize this. It's a non-standard transaction format, so that's why you heard him mention that it was actually brought in using Mara Slipstream. So that's, I think, really, really great progress. And it's nice to know that we have multiple research angles going on. This is one of many quantum research projects and something that's actually in the blockchain now. So you can actually point to something, look, that's a transaction that's been mined. It's a quantum-proof transaction in the chain right now. So hopefully it cuts back on some of the FUD. All right. Narrative flip alert. You recall when folks came out of the woodwork right around when Zcash was having its pump, just anecdotally, claiming that Bitcoin would never work as a central bank asset because it was too transparent? It was episode 95, in case you don't recall, so I understand it's been a little bit. Here is a reminder. This is Ray Dalio making an ass of himself.
Okay, so Bitcoin does not have privacy. Any transactions can be monitored and then indirectly perhaps controlled. Central banks are not going to want to buy Bitcoin and being able to hold it. So it's not just individuals, it's institutions and so on, but most, you know, and central banks, so that there are attributes of that. There has been some question or thoughts of the development of, you know, new technologies like quantum computing and so on. Can there be issues regarding that? And then there's, you know, who owns it and what are the other exposures that they have in their portfolio? It tends to have a pretty high correlation with the tech stocks. So from an ownership, you know, just the supply demand is affected by if somebody gets squeezed in one thing, they sell something that whatever else they have. So there are those dynamics. It's a long way, and it's a relatively small market that's a relatively controllable market. I think a lot of attention has been given to Bitcoin, but as a money, you know, it's small in relationship to gold. And so, you know, those are the dynamics. There is only one gold.
What about silver?
There's some things that are like obvious in there. But then there's some things that I think are kind of measuring the system from within the system. And Ray isn't really able to appreciate some of the dynamics that are building that are structural headwinds, not just in the monetary system, but in the social system as well. And this came up recently on the stage at Bitcoin Asia. And Bahali, I think is how you say his name. He was on stage talking about this, and he pointed out that trust is extremely scarce, and it's becoming as scarce as Bitcoin.
If, let's say, Nayib Bukele wants to prove how much Bitcoin El Salvador has, he can just post an address, and then he can show himself moving funds from that address, okay? Mm-hmm. If, however, and this is not obvious, if he wanted to post a video of his Fort Knox with the gold bricks, that would not be trusted in the age of AI. You could do a hyper-realistic video from every angle with people there that look exactly like they are. So no one would trust a video of Fort Knox anymore, right? Fort Knox may as well not exist in a low-trust era, but Bitcoin does. And so Bitcoin's transparency, I think, means it becomes the reserve currency of Western institutions that need to prove solvency in the post-fiat era.
All right, well, while we have the time machine handy, you all recall that gold bug and macro analyst Luke Groman was talking about selling his Bitcoin around 90,000. He was on the Natalie Brunell podcast shortly after that became public news. This is what he had to say.
I know you've gotten a lot of flack for sharing that you sold your Bitcoin. You expect for us to get that whoosh down and you're going to buy back lower. I heard you say on another podcast that one of the reasons you sold or what you did with it is you ended up paying off another house, your lake house, where you get to watch the sunsets. I was thinking about the capital gains tax. If you sell Bitcoin, you have to pay taxes. So if it crashes to maybe 60, 70, you're not even really making that much on it.
At the end of the day, the real answer, the real reason for me is I think I've come to the conclusion that we are now completely off the reservation in terms of where we may end up going over the next couple years. And I just felt like I wanted to have no debt whatsoever. Mm. But the bigger part is just, I don't know what I don't know about what's gonna happen the next 2 years around the geopolitical side, the monetary side, the AI side. And so for me, I'm just like, you know what? I think we may go through just this huge disruptive period of time, this culmination of the fourth turning, and I don't wanna have any debt. It probably was the wrong thing to do from a financial standpoint, but it was the right thing to do from a state of mind standpoint, just given the rising discomfort with what I'm seeing. Let me be specific. When they shot Charlie Kirk, I think a lot of things changed. And I think that was where I started thinking differently about some of these sort of fourth turning, you know, the Overton window about what could happen over the next 2-3 years. And my Overton window, which is, I think, usually wider than most people's anyway, blew apart entirely.
I think this is an interesting clip because it really shows that Luke let his emotions get the best of him and, unfortunately, the clients that he advises as well. And it turns out Natalie might have been right on that whole capital gains tax washing out any kind of gains, because now we've got a new tune from Luke.
From W4, are you long Bitcoin? I never sold out all of my Bitcoin. I sold most of it. I went from irresponsibly long after riding it from, call it, 20K to 120K back down to 96K, where I sold most of it.
By irresponsibly long and, you know, proportional to portfolios, I assume he must be, you know, comparing it to standard advisements, which is, you know, 1-5% of your portfolio at most.
Now I am at a, you know, like slightly above what would be considered a market rate, which is a market weight, excuse me, which is, it's not a lot, but it, I still have some exposure. I am getting much more interested. Like I said, I'll be looking to see what happens at Jackson Hole at and post both, what is said and how it reacts.
I just I don't understand why he thinks so short term with it, because let's just do the math here. So say he's right, and he sold at 96,000, and now he's getting quote-unquote interested again and layering back in around 80,000-ish, or even say 70,000. Like, the numbers don't work out. You might look and go, oh, yeah, he sold at 96, and he bought back in at 80 or, you know, 75. But it's not that simple. So the moment he sold, he created a taxable event on whatever gains he had, and you heard him say he bought in way low, way low, and then he sold at 96. So his capital gains are pretty significant. So he created a major capital gains event, and now Bitcoin's not going to get much cheaper. And after paying the tax man, he may not actually have enough cash left to buy the same amount of Bitcoin that he sold. That's just going to be the economics of it. He'd have to either put more money in, but he's not going to get it from the revenue after the tax man. So this whole clever trade, he may end up with less Bitcoin And the only winner in this is the IRS, not Luke. Because, like, in his own words, he got a little too cute. He thought the world was going to completely blow up. I've played other clips of him in the past. He got emotional, and he got lettuce hands. Now, does it go down further? Maybe. Still doesn't prove his thesis right, especially when you're talking about a long-term macro asset like Bitcoin. I just think the entire thing has been kind of this interesting drama playing out. And so I wanted to do a little follow-up on it, if you will. Well, Luke might not be there yet with how he sees Bitcoin, but Bitwise's Matt Hogan is, and he agrees it's market fit time, baby, and we're just getting warmed up.
Yeah, look, I think Bitcoin provides a service that the world wants. The service it provides is the ability to store wealth in a digital format without a government or a bank. Gold provides the same service in a physical format. Kevin Warsh says, you know, if you're under 40, Bitcoin is your gold. I think that's true. And so the case for owning it is if even a small fraction of the world decides they want to hold some wealth in a digital format without a government or a bank, the price of Bitcoin has a long room to run on the upside. At Bitwise, we think it gets to about 1.3 million by 2035. I can walk through the math if you're interested, but I think that's the base case. Look, we live in a world where we just crossed $40 trillion in debt. The US added more debt in the last year than we did in the first 211. We printed more money in the last quarter than we did in the global financial crisis. It's sort of crazy. A small portion allocation to Bitcoin, I think, makes a lot of sense. And as I mentioned, I think there's a huge amount of upside still left in this asset.
Let's check in on the state of the network. I am wrapping up at block height 965,206. Bitcoin's price to US dollar right now, 77,280. That puts our sats per dollar at 1,294. We're currently down 38.8% from our all-time high 330 days ago, you effing champ. You diamond hand champ. Our difficulty retarget date is September 5th. Just a couple of days away, with an estimated difficulty change upward of 0.7%. There are 27,003 nodes reachable on the network. Bitcoin is down 1.4% from last episode, but up 0.8% for 24 hours, and down 30.1% year over on the year. And fees are low. Immediate is 1 sat per V-byte. Half hour is 0.10. Network's ticking right along, and it's strong. Well, if you made it this far, my hope is that your takeaway from this episode is Bitcoin's bullish setup that we're seeing is becoming structural. It's becoming adopted. It's becoming the mentality. It isn't about one bill passing. It's about the debt system itself starting to show the cracks, the contentious fight between the Fed and the Treasury being obvious to everyone, and the fact that there's no way we're going to grow our way out of all of this. And then you bring it all together with trust getting harder and harder to come by, and Bitcoin being right there for it. Exactly at the same time that institutions are starting to treat Bitcoin like a real long-term asset. That's the shift that's really setting in this week. It's not an immediate thing, but it's an important one. So it's not going away anytime soon, and I'll continue to follow it. Links to what I talked about this week at thisweekinbitcoin.show. That's where the links are for stories and other things that didn't even make it in here. Whole back catalogs over there as well. My goal is to give you a show that doesn't get distracted by the emotions or the politics. That's, you know, really just gets focused on the signal. So that way you, yourself, your friends, your family, your business, whatever it is, you can plan for the future and knowing that you're getting it from a source that has your best interest. That's why we do the value for value model, and that's why we focus on the signal. So let me know how I did with the boost, boost.jupiterbroadcasting.com. And of course, I always love to know what you want to hear from a future show. Always trying to work that stuff in and anything I might have missed. And also any tips, like, you know, like hot tips for the show, like a software release, news story, you can always boost in those as well. All right, I'm out of here. I got to go. Thanks for joining me. See you next week.